and take me on a wonderful journey of faith. Steve was talking just a while ago about we've got a baptism next Sunday. And 40 years ago yesterday, I got baptized. And it was at that time God changed me. Prior to that, I had put off being baptized because I was too scared to stand in front of people and share what God had done for me. And I just kept putting it off. But on that day, I can't remember much about the service. I was terrified. But the moment I got up to speak, I had such a overwhelming expression of God's love. You can call it a baptism in the Spirit. That I just let him have it. And eventually the Reverend Law said, Steve, that's brilliant. We need to baptize you. But at that point, I'd encountered a God that I knew I could trust, who would be with me. And through my life, through all the ups and downs, and those of you who know me, we've had some big downs as well as some great highs. This wonderful, faithful God has been there with me. And it's given me many, many opportunities as well. Again, as a very quiet introvert, I never actually sought out anything really. But lots of opportunities came my way. And out of that, I finished up getting very involved in Mongolia and in a church plant. At that point, when I first went there, the church was 18 months old. Prior to that, in the 80s, it was estimated that there were under 100 Christians in Mongolia. It was one of the few countries that had never experienced Christianity. But the church was taking off, and I got involved. And on one of my first trips out there, there was a young man who got saved and was fervent. And he was evangelizing to one of his friends who would have absolutely nothing to do with it. So in the end, in frustration, he picked up a piece of wood about 2 foot long, whacked him around the head and put him in hospital. The point we got involved with, I was with my friend who was living out there and he was co-leading the church. We were explaining to the local constabulary that this wasn't the normal method of church evangelism. And that, you know, the police there take rather a more relaxed view about these things. Because it was his friend, they decided it was a domestic rather than a criminal activity and no further action was taken. But why do I tell you this story? And it is a true story. People recognised in this young Mongolian man that there was something in him. They gave him lavish hospitality. He lived with people and they went out of their way. And while they were giving this amazing hospitality, he grew in his faith. They were able to demonstrate kingdom living and kingdom values. As he grew in faith, he went off and planted a church in the Gobi Desert, then a small town in the Gobi Desert. I actually had an invitation to go down there, which I was unable to take. And one of the perks of going down there, the guys in the army were short of money. And for a few dollars, you could have a go in one of their tanks. And it was $25 for every shell you fired. I'd have loved to have done that, but I didn't get the chance. But he continued to grow. He came back and then co-led a much bigger church where a lot of people invested in him, again, mainly through hospitality. He is currently pastoring a church and they've now done 5 church plants into the rural areas. Hospitality is very powerful. In the book of Acts, we see that when Stephen and the others were commissioned, the apostles laid hands on them. That's how important hospitality was to the folk in the New Testament. Don't do this to me. So as we look at this area of hospitality, I ask you the question, when I say hospitality, what does that mean to you? Suzanne, what does hospitality mean to you? Yep. Anyone else? Yes? Yep. 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 These are all good things. And incidentally, but just before I go on, when we were out in Mongolia, because people would never engage, what they used to do was, my friend, he would have a box of sweets, and when everyone answered a question, he would lob a sweet at them. And but then also, Frank made a suggestion this morning that rather than have a sermon, I'd do much better taking you all to Wetherspoons for breakfast. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen, but you can have a sweet. But as we look at this whole definition of hospitality, I looked up on my computer, and this was the definition that it gave. And isn't it sad that as us Brits, we get a bad press on hospitality? The Englishman's home is his castle. That we have the reputation of being standoffish. But I have to say, I haven't experienced that here in Oakham. I want to thank everyone who made us so welcome when we came to the church. For the visitors here amongst us, we are a relatively newcomers. We've only been here 4 years. But we were welcomed with open arms into the church here. And some of the guys invited me out and really, really blessed me. So I want to honour you people, and I want to honour those on the welcome team who do it. They do it Sunday by Sunday. But also, it is so important as a fellowship. We all buy into this, making people welcome. A slightly more cynical definition I found was making your guests feel at home when you wish they were at home. If we're honest, have we been there? So, we are looking at the DNA of our church. Everywhere we go, we leave a trace of DNA. If a forensic scientist came in today, he could prove I've been here because somewhere I would have left my DNA. When it comes to hospitality, it is exactly the same. As we meet with people, we will leave a trace of what is in us, what our hospitality was or wasn't. I would be incredibly sad for anyone not to join the church because they weren't made welcome. I can understand we get visitors, and visitors, you're really welcome. Some people might not find our style, our worship of worship or the style of service, what is right for them. And we want to bless them and help them. But if they didn't come here because the DNA of our church didn't welcome them, that would be incredibly sad. Frank last week was talking about discipling, that we were either being discipled or discipling others, and it's very much the same with hospitality. I've had my life changed by hospitality given and people investing in me. And I expect you can think of people that have shown great hospitality and changed you. Also, we sometimes beat ourselves up and we're very modest, but sometimes hospitality that we give others changes their life forever. And one example of that is many, many years ago, I was loosely involved in running an Alpha course. And my bit was I organised a social. We did a barbecue where it just came along and it was a social evening. About 3 months after that, I had a phone call inviting me to go to a baptism service of one of the guys that was on the course. I didn't really know him. I don't even know his name. And at that, when he gave his testimony, he said while he was at our home, something that was shared, which he didn't elaborate on, enabled him to come to faith. Hospitality is powerful. Hospitality is in God's DNA. It's throughout the Bible. It started in the Garden of Eden. We read that. I've often thought about that, you know. Adam, God walked with Adam and Eve in the cool of the evening. That's just mind-blowing. And as we go on looking at the Old Testament, if you go through the Levitical law, it was something that was a duty. Hospitality in the Bible has never been optional. Throughout that, there was always provision for the stranger, for the poor, for the needy, the widow, the orphan. And that carried on. Then, one of the examples that we often use is Abraham when he had the three men visited him, and the hospitality that Abraham offered him. Now, I've had this preached at us that, you know, this is what you've got to do. You know, this is how you do it. I'm sorry, I don't go with that. Hospitality has never been something we have, this is how you do it. But it's in the heart, it's in our heart and it's in our nature. And just reading a little bit on the background of this, hospitality in the Old Testament, while it was very real and very powerful, it was normally negotiated that the time, what was required, it could be extended, and it was often lavish and extensive, but it was never open-ended. And I think there's great wisdom in that as we look at what we do with the homeless and all these other things, that we have prayerful, godly, sanctified wisdom in what we do. It's very easy in a meeting to feel challenged and condemned, saying, yeah, this is what I got to do. And that can sometimes lead to real problems. So prayer. And do you see how this is all linking back into our whole series? Hospitality was always lavish. If you want to read some good stories, time won't permit it this morning, but there's read Deuteronomy 14:25-29. Another, I love Nehemiah, he's one of my heroes. He was a spiritual man, but also very practical. After Ezra read the law, the people were, it said they were cut to the heart, they repented. They didn't have a worship service. He said, no, go out, celebrate, get the best wine. And I probably was very good wine. They had a marvellous party, and their parties went on for days. When you read about this, the whole lot went on for 8 days. They knew how to party. The commentator, Matthew Henry, says, holy joy, not misery or a martyr spirit, will oil the wheels of our obedience. In Matthew, this is one of the great verses of the Bible. As we love our neighbour as ourselves, that will lead us to hospitality. What do our neighbours think of our hospitality? I would suggest that our neighbourology is much more important to them than our theology. And one of the things I've been doing over time as I've got to know people here, I've gone and talked to a lot of people in the church. And one person I was talking to, I asked him if he got any regrets. And he said, one very big one. Soon after he moved to the area, and it was late in the year, he was just after Christmas, he was invited to a New Year's party. But he didn't go because there was a new midnight prayer meeting in the church. He said he never ever got another invitation because he was the guy that was religious and went to church. And he said that was a huge regret. So, godly wisdom in what we do. So when we offer hospitality, we start to get lots of opportunities. Going out spending time with people is a wonderful opportunity for discipleship, for prayer, for generosity. Does some of this stuff start to ring a bell? For encouragement, for grace. All families at times have little fallouts. It happens. There's nothing like sitting around the meal table and sorting things out. Hospitality within the family. And in the times of Abraham, in the traditions of the Old Testament, that it was a physical sign of reconciliation. If you went and ate with somebody, you were reconciled. And it's quite interesting in some of my friends from other countries, for them, where eating together, and this is much more important, the betrayal of Judas is just so much more powerful to them. It's also good to worship together. I've had some great times of worship where we've had a meal together, enjoyed each other's company, prayed together and worshiped together. Hospitality is powerful. Like I said at the start, it was never my intention to stand up here and tell you how to do hospitality. It is not prescriptive, but it's not optional and it's not passive. To just give you an example of what I mean, a great act of hospitality that affected my life. Back in the late 60s, when I was a teenager with a those days it was the long hair, I had a mass of curly hair because my hair curls really tight down to my shoulders. And if I wore sunglasses, I looked more like Colonel Gaddafi. And these flowery shirts, goodness knows what my parents went through. But I had a Lambretta 175 scooter. And being that it was a bit old and clapped out, it required lots of maintenance. Well, in the summer it was all right, but in the winter, my friend who also had one, his mum used to let them wheel them into the kitchen, and we worked on them in the kitchen. Now, my friend's dad, who was quite a good mechanic, used to come and help us. What I didn't realise was that by their hospitality, he was putting things into me that were an enormous help on my journey to faith. So that's a challenge for you parents who've got teenage sons when they get their motorbikes. How would you feel about having them take them apart in the kitchen? As someone who has to do infection control at work, and that it would, yeah, mount an interesting challenge. But my point is, hospitality is being prayerfully inventive, if we want for a better phrase. This is one of the verses in the Bible that I've taken with me for many, many years. There are lots of things I know I cannot do, but there are things that I can do. There are lots of things for you folk you can't do, but there are things all of us here can do. And it's being prayerful and saying, God, what do you want me to do? Because when you do that wholeheartedly, God will open up amazing opportunities for you. And this is another verse I love. Peter just puts it as it is. Hospitality is something we should do joyfully. Sadly, in my life, it's not always been the case. But we're working at it. I am very blessed to have a wife who is brilliant at hospitality. She's not here in the second service, otherwise she'd have got all embarrassed. But she is just so much more gracious than I am. Hospitality comes from the heart. We can't make it a prescriptive thing. Again, I just want to honour some of you guys out there. As an elder, I get to hear what's happening, which the wider church doesn't. There is amazing hospitality goes on within OBC. Do we want to do more? Of course we do. Do we want to get better? Yes, we do. But don't let's beat ourselves up. We're doing a lot of good. So be encouraged. My point earlier, with hospitality, be prayerfully proactive. Just look out for opportunities to bless people. And that may be just as simple as taking someone out for a coffee. Hospitality is powerful. Just please, if there's one thing I want you to remember today, that will be it. We're now coming up with the time of taking communion, when we celebrate this amazing gift of Jesus. In the early church, not exclusively, but a lot of the time, this was celebrated in a home over a meal. It would have been a time of generosity. It would have been a time of provision for those that didn't have. And it would also be a joyful time. Again, I remind you of what Matthew Henry said, that holy joy is what we should be celebrating with. Because as we celebrate this, one day we're going to stand before the King of Kings and join in that great banquet. If you read in Revelation 19 of the marriage feast of the Lamb, time doesn't permit this morning to go into all these things, but I would encourage you to go away and look at God's lavish hospitality in the Bible, all that he's done for us, and also the consequences of rejection. The parable in Matthew 22 of the banquet, where people refused, made excuses and rejected God's lavish hospitality. For a Jewish audience, they would have understood very how hurtful that would have been to reject the host's hospitality. So if you've never accepted God's lavish hospitality, then come and see us, talk about it. I think that's all I want to say about this. But as we celebrate communion, let's do it joyfully and encourage one another. Thank you.